Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Coach's Corner. I'm Coach Andrew Poritz from Ingenuity Coaching. I help people to discover and fulfill their passions and greatness. My mission is to inspire and challenge you to dream big dreams, and with my coaching, help you to manifest those dreams into reality. You can visit my website at www.myfuturecoach.com and follow me on twitter.com/coachandrew. If you're listening live and you have a question, the phone number here is 646-929-2893. You'll be able to listen to the show on the phone, and if you press the number 1, this will let me know you have a question. We also have a live chat room right on the show page where you can feel free to join in and ask questions there. My guest tonight, Tim Levy, is an Aussie, and he's calling in from halfway around the world. Tim is the author of The Life Summit, a culmination of Levy's experience and enlightenment, linking mind, body, spirit, and grounded business strategies. Tim is also a CEO, a producer, a TV show host, and an entrepreneur. And he has said, without exception, every dream that he's conceived has come to fruition in the real world. You can learn more about Tim Levy at www.thelifesummit.com. Tim, are you with me?
Absolutely, but let's just get clear. It's morning over here.
Good morning, mate.
Exactly. You got to start with good day and good morning and all that kind of good
stuff. That's right. Absolutely. Well, what time is it over there?
I guess it's about 11:30 in the morning, so it's just after breakfast and just before lunch, the very sensible time of day when everyone should be thinking about having a nap. I guess not everyone can do that.
No. Sadly, no.
And,
wow.
Yeah.
That's awesome. So this is perhaps the longest distance call I've done on the show.
And, you know, it's only last week I was in New York, so it would have been a local call then.
But no, we couldn't make that work. Oh, well.
That's okay.
I love technology. So you are the author of The Life Summit, which I've had a chance to look through. I've read parts of the book. I've not yet read it all. I'm sorry to tell you, but it's what I've seen so far is terrific.
Well, I'm glad you've enjoyed it. It's meant to be an easy read. You know, it's not really a textbook. It's kind of, it's a little bit more fun than that. Have you had sort of a light and easy time reading it and the stories and stuff?
Oh, sure. Sure, I just ran out of time.
Yeah. Well, fair enough.
Okay.
What can I tell you about it?
Well, first of all, how did you come to write this book?
Well, you know, I've had a kind of a reasonably outrageous life, it turns out. Well, at least I feel that way. And where a lot of the things that I've wanted to do in my life, which are, you know, some of the trickier things to do, you know, get your own TV show, books published, albums, tours, stuff like that, a lot of the people around me started to ask questions after a while. They're like, well, how is it that you almost routinely make these things happen? What gives? What's this about? And I'd say, well, you know, actually it's a specific thing that I do. And, you know, friends would come by and I'd spend a half a day or a day and take them through it. And eventually there were too many friends and they said, well, I can't take up all my working life doing this. And they suggested I write it down. So it was very much a kind of book by request is how I came to write this book.
Hmm. And it's the six steps. Did you call?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, that was one of those fun things where we were looking around for a little tag for the title, and the publisher out of New York, they came up with Map Out the Life of Your Dreams in 6 Easy Steps, which kind of sounds a little bit like something you might find on a packet of cornflakes, you know. Six varieties of multigrain guaranteed to make you healthy. But, yeah, it is actually as simple as 6 steps. It's actually kind of a really fun thing to do. What I find is when I'm doing talks and we start people on the first step right there in the live appearances, it's getting them to stop is the real problem. You know, because once they start eating candy and getting out the crayons and mucking around with big sheets of paper, it's altogether too much fun.
So describe that experience.
Oh, well, you know, I've had a great time. I've been just in the last month, I spent most of April in the States. And in every city I went to, we did a couple of live events. And we'd get, you know, a bunch of people. And I really am not a believer in telling people about stuff. I'm much more of a believer in showing people, you know, let's do it. And the way that this process works, it's kind of, it starts off, the idea of the Life Summit is that you're basically going to take a day out of your life as if you're doing, you know, like the G20 summit that you guys host, I think, in New York?
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like that. It's like the G1, right? It's like the G Andrew, right? And you take that whole day to basically dwell on, focus on, and get outrageous clarity on really your perfect life and every facet of that. So the first half of that is very, very right-brained. It's about getting yourself in touch with that intuition, that kind of fun inner child, which is why I tend to throw bags of candy at the people at my talks, because, you know, when you're eating that candy, what was the candy that you ate when you were young, you know, and it reminds me of your child, reminds you of your childhood? What was that for you?
Oh, I had a few, but the one that just popped into my head were those little orange and white cones that you get on Halloween. I don't know if you had them where you were.
Right, right, the Halloween cones, sure. So, you know, we bring a variety of candy along to the talks, and we offer them to people to kind of get them into that childlike creative space. Because when you're a kid, you generally, you know what you want to do with your life. It's when you grow up and start to get reasonable and logical that clarity kind of recedes, right?
Sure.
So so you get people into that, we get people into that childlike place. And also, you know, I like to get things written down. I like to get things out of your brain onto the page or into conversation. And to do that, most people, you know, they pull out a little clip pen out of their pocket and a little notepad about the size of, you know, four fingers, and they start. And I'm like, that's not fun. That's not childlike. You know, children love to write on the walls. Mm. You know, we keep stopping them, but that's what my kids still do that. It's like, come on, guys. But short of what we actually had in Sydney, we have a wall covered in glass, so you can actually write on it, which is kind of fun. But short of that, I just bring those, you know, those tabloid-sized pieces of paper. You know the ones I'm talking about?
Sure.
Yeah, so we bring a bunch of them along. And then we bring a bunch of Sharpies, I guess you call
okay.
them. And we have people pick out the color that, again, reminds them of fun and creativity and imagination. And by the time we've mucked around kind of setting that up for a few minutes, they're kind of in that fun, playful space where they're really connected to their intuition and imagination. And really the first step is just incredibly simple. And I like to use mind mapping. I like to use brainstorming, all those sorts of things. But, you know, because we don't necessarily have time to teach all that in the first 6 minutes of the talk, we just kind of say, okay, cool, whatever method you can, we want you to write down in a kind of diagrammatic, fun, mind-mapping way the answer to one question. And the question is, what would your perfect life look like in 10 years from now? And people just start to go nuts, man. Once they get this idea, they just start, you know, drawing and like, this perfect house and this awesome job, and they get... It turns out very excited and explicit about describing their perfect partner. That can get graphic.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And their, you know, their perfect boat and their perfect shoes and their perfect car and all that kind of stuff. So the talk can degenerate at that point into a little bit of a excited bunch of adults, you know, playing like their kids, which is kind of exactly what I love doing. So, you know, add a little bit of comedy to that, and that's what our events are about.
Where did you come up with the 10 years? What was the basis for that?
Well, the fact is that it doesn't. It's kind of an arbitrary number. The thing that you want to do is you want to unlock that part of you that starts trying to be reasonable.
Mm-hmm.
So if you said to someone, what does your life look like in 12 months from now? Well, then they start instantly, intuitively, to map forward from where they are right now.
Right.
So instead of saying, what's the most outrageous, fantastic, they kind of go, well, I'm earning $76,000 now, so maybe I could earn $78,000 in 12 months. But that's only if my boss, you know, they start going logical on you. And the fact is that dreams are not logical. You know, they're just not. So, you know, I was mucking around doing this over the course of time, and 10 years out seemed to be far enough out that everyone knew anything can happen in 10 years. You know, it's not far enough out that you're like half dead. You know, you're at the other end of the game. It's just far enough out that anything is possible. So in a way, it's arbitrary, but 10 years is just that length of time that seems to let people just let go and say, all right, anything's possible. Man, I want $1 million in the bank. I want 3 red Ferraris. I want, you know, whatever. And by the way, people do not always go for possessions. I don't want to be misleading you there, because this is a very personal thing. So people are, you know, I want you know, some children, or, you know, a little boy and a little girl, or I want a great relationship. Lots of women are after the perfect man, it turns out, and that perfect man looks different to every single woman.
Have any of them described me, by the way?
Well, actually, one was really cool. She got really specific. It took a while to pull it out of her. But she described her perfect man, and one of the criterion was an Olympic athlete. Are you, in fact, an Olympic athlete?
I'm sorry to tell you I'm not an Olympic athlete.
Well, that's one. What's the other one? I'm trying to remember. There was a lovely, I become friends with some of these people. A great friend of mine in Austin, Anna, she was after the perfect man. I'm trying to remember the criterion of exactly what that was. You know, I don't know. I'll send her your photo and we'll see what happens.
Oh, okay. I was really just being silly, but that would be funny.
Yeah, sure. Absolutely.
What is the most outrageous thing that you can remember that somebody threw out?
You know, people are great this way. And, you know, if I could just go backwards a little before this last tour where I was doing this, you know, because, you know, when you've got a tour, you've got a couple of hours to talk to people, and there's six steps. We might get into, like, that first step and really kind of get engaged in that. The other five steps, which are to do with kind of, I'll say, left-braining, bringing it back into reality and mapping out some possible paths and so forth, we don't necessarily get to. But when I work one-on-one with someone, we get to do the whole thing. And in particular, I've been doing this in Sydney for a little while, and one of my clients, when I released the book, she was sort of a reviewer, and she read the book, and she's like, I want to do this. She came by, and we spent the day, actually in the room that I'm standing in right now, and we mapped out all of her stuff, and one of the criterion she had was this perfect man, and he, I thought it was great, because we really got specific, and it did turn out that she wrote down about 10 things, one of which was to be an Olympic athlete. And I love it because it's sort of so outrageous, you know? You know, how many Olympic athletes are there, let alone single, let alone, you know, running around Sydney? And what was so great was, you know, there's a process sort of designed to kind of, I want to say, release that. These things come in their own way, in their own form. You're not always, you know, it's not always the way that you think things are going to happen. In fact, I think most of the time things turn up in the way that you don't think it's going to happen. So about a month later, she calls me up and she says, you know, the most amazing thing happened. Some friends of mine put me onto a dating site, put my profile out there, and I had, you know, these guys email me back, and sure enough, the one I was interested in, one of the criterion on his profile was Olympic athlete.
Awesome.
That was about 3-4 months ago, and I believe they're still going strong. So, you know, that was an outrageous thing that was asked for and received. So, you know, these things happen.
So could you go through, like, briefly these six steps are?
Yeah, sure, of course. So that first step is to basically ask and answer that question of what is your perfect life? What does it look like in every detail in 10 years? So, for example, you know, houses and cars and, you know, relationships and possessions and spirituality and love life and everything in between. That's the first step, and to do that, you want to be in that nice creative place. You've actually, I talk about asking the left brain to actually leave the room, and sometimes they go and open the door and usher it out, because, really, the left brain comes back, and it's kind of a bit of a saboteur when it comes to brainstorming. So
it's sort of like the opposite of Passover.
Oh, right.
Where you let Elijah.
If anybody
knows what I'm talking about, that's okay. It's okay if they don't.
That's a little Jewish joke there.
Yes, little Jewish joke.
As a Levy, I should know all of those jokes.
Exactly.
So, you know, you do that first step, and that's fun. I mean, that can you can take hours once you really get into that. And the way I like to do it is I encourage people, you know, I do it with people, or I encourage people to do that in little pairs, little buddy pairs, where one person is kind of pulling that out of the other person. So you kind of, you know, this is drawn out of you, this amazing dream. And then maybe have a little break and go into the sort of the second half of the day, which is really all the other steps. And in the second half of the day, you start getting a little left brain about it. So the right brain can be around, but really the left brain, now it's your time to come back into the room. Let's quantify this. Let's be specific. So, okay, if we had that you want $1 million in 10 years, step two is, where do you want to be in 5 years? Mm-hmm. And it's easy if you've got $1 million in 10 years, maybe you want to be at $500,000 in 5 years. And you go around that chart that you created, that mind map you created, and you know, link by link, you translate it back into kind of a, what you call a halfway result or a five-year result. That's step two. Step three, now you're starting to get a bit more in your actual immediate future. Let's map it out for a year from now. So, for example, one of the things in my life chart is I love having these kind of outrageous life experiences. I like, you know, skiing and scuba diving and riding horses and stuff. And I think I wrote out about 20 for my 10-year thing. So my five-year thing had about 10 of them. And then my one-year thing, you know, I wasn't prepared to I wanted like three of them in the first year. Mm-hmm. And a couple of them, like scuba diving for me, then had to be a certain season. Like I really only wanted to do that in the summer. So step four, if you've done 10 years out, 5 years out, 1 year out, step four is now to knock that down to kind of a bit of a month-by-month thing. And in that sense, I sort of said, you know, scuba diving in the summer and horse riding in the winter, you know, and you start to kind of time things a little bit. And you've taken this outrageous huge dream and kind of broken it down into achievable. Achievable is not even the right word, just kind of, you know, something you can wrap your head around kind of sorts of things. And then I kind of almost go the other way for five and six, which is step five is I talk about what is a perfect day. What would be a perfect day for you, a weekday, a weekend day? Because, again, people don't really bring this to their consciousness. They just kind of get up and eat their cereal and have a shower and get into the car and whatever without kind of thinking, what would be great? What would be awesome? What would make this day perfect? So we go into a process around perfect day, and then step six is perfect week. And within that perfect week, the idea is to kind of routinely check in on the 1 year out, the 5 year out, and the 10 year out, so that what you're doing through this whole process is really simple. And this is very principles of attraction stuff now. You're bringing into your consciousness again and again, which is to say consistently, an absolute focused and clear picture of your perfect life. If you can do that consistently, you can do it unambiguously, these things just start to show up in their own way. And that's kind of the magic of it, is it starts to just kind of happen in generally outrageous and really fun ways.
But you know, that's you six know, steps. When you're talking about the perfect day or the perfect week, are these like the single perfect day, single perfect weeks? Is this something you're creating as a ongoing perfect day, or is this a sort of...
Yeah. More, for me, it like wherever it is that you start, what you're looking for is that ongoing perfect day or perfect week. So, for example, in my own perfect week, I should say on perfect day within that week, you know, I don't like to get up before 7. Now, I have very young children.
Okay.
So my perfect day doesn't always happen.
Right.
You know, but in an ideal world, I'm up at 7, and I've got myself a couple of hours to, you know, do a bit of drive kids to school, have a bit of breakfast, and spend a little time with the family. In particular, I'm a kind of a big meditator, so and I like to do it at the lake. So getting up, walking with my boys to the lake, they play on the swings, I take 10 minutes to meditate, we get back in time. You know, these are parts of the picture of my perfect day that I can do every day. You know, now, I don't necessarily get to do it every day, but because I got a nice map, you know, sitting on my wall of what the perfect day looks like, at least it's brought back to my consciousness again and again. And every time I do that, it just becomes a little closer to manifesting. So, you know, it's more that ongoing thing and then ongoing perfect week, sort of coming up with a framework, if you will. And then you can sort of block into that, you know, working things and so forth. I'm a bit of a time manager when it comes down to it, you know, making sure you actually get to everything.
And what's your process for that?
Well, you know, again, it starts off in that very right brain creative place. So, again, for me, mind mapping's great. The reason I like mind mapping, and I'm getting that you're very familiar with it, mm-hmm. is mind mapping is very messy. You know, it's very organic. It's very this thought linked to that. Oh, hang on, scribble that out, add that, draw this, link that in, colorful crayons, Sharpies, whatever. And to be honest, that kind of mess is a good reflection of my brain, and I think probably most people's brains. So I start there. So I start with clients and say, all right, what sorts of things might be in your perfect day? You know, do you want to sleep? Yeah, put that up. All right, how much sleep? 6 hours. Okay, cool. Do you want to – and they just start ripping out of their brains all these cool things that they love to do, whether it's on a weekend or a weekday or whatever. So we kind of get them up in that very creative place and pull all these things out of people in that very creative – again, you know, you're eating that Halloween candy – And once we've done the right branding, got, you know, I don't think you ever get to absolute completion, but got them to the point where they feel like, you know, that's 80% of what would come up in a good day for me. And then kind of map it back into a sort of left brain process where we take the mind map and we put it into, in my case, I like to quite like to use Excel. You know, once something's on a computer in Excel, man, it's as left brained as it can be.
Sure.
And you can put columns and times and, you know, all that kind of good stuff. So there's a process to do that. Again, for want of a better way of putting it, it's laid out blow by blow somewhere in the book there and pretty easy to do.
So I like how you're using, as you say, the left and the right brain in these two very, very distinct types of ways.
Mm. Absolutely.
Now, you talk also a lot about brainstorming.
Yeah, absolutely.
What would you say is like the best way for people to brainstorm?
That's a good question. Well, firstly, my feeling about brainstorming is 90% preparation. I don't know if everyone else agrees with that, but if you go into brainstorming and you're like, I don't know, you're at your cubicle in your office and there's a laptop sitting to you and there's a gray, you know, the gray cubicles I'm talking about?
Oh, sure.
Right, where there's like 300 people in a room and there's people all talking around you and someone's got the radio and there's a TV monitor showing CNN. You know, all that kind of, that's like, why even start? That's no good. So for me, the first thing about brainstorming is to make sure that you kind of, it's almost a ritual to get prepared for it. So find a great place. That place may or may not be, you know, the office boardroom in your office. I tend to think it's not. When I'm doing brainstorming with executive teams, I take them out of there. I've done brainstorming sitting on the steps by a lighthouse. I've done brainstorming in a circle of redwood trees in California. I've done brainstorming in facilities that are made for that, and almost always it feels like this big kind of grown-up version of a play school, you know, colorful, fun, beanbags, you know, lots of creative materials, post-it notes of every color, Sharpies, paper, butcher's paper, stickers, you know, just all kinds of fun creative stuff, and man, got to be fun creative food. I mean, you just, I don't know about you, but I don't get that creative eating Spam, you know. it just doesn't get me there, you know. So that's why I like this idea of getting foods that are you know, remind you of your childhood. Sometimes when I have a, I guess I'm doing the one-on-one day with people, they'll turn up at the door and they're ready to come in, man, they're ready to start. I'm like, we're going out, and I hand them a 20, which in my country is colored red, as all $20 notes should be colored. And take them down to the Safeway, and you know, let them at the candy aisle, and just say, just buy everything that your mum would not let you eat.
Mm.
You know, you're an adult. Here's a 20. Go nuts. And you know, people just start to kind of relax and laugh, and there's a bit of music maybe, and you know, crazy people dance. You know, just kind of get into that really fun place. If there are other people there as well, and sometimes in brainstorming that's the case, you know, you want to connect with them at that place. Sometimes I kind of put up posters and they say stuff like, you know, think stupid and there's nothing. You know, the key thing about brainstorming is to be non-judgmental. Who knows what idea is going to spark off what other idea is going to spark off another idea. The only word that's illegal in brainstorming is no, you know. And unfortunately, it's the word that most people have on speed dial. You know,
it kind of reminds me of I love to talk about improvisation, meaning improvisational theater or acting, and that the key word there that you don't say is no.
Well, you know, it's interesting you say that, because maybe we have a shared background. I've got somewhat of a background out of improv as well, and I talk to people a lot about blocking a scene versus, you know, yes and. It's amazing how few people apply this to their lives and how blocked they get because of it. And a brainstorm is the first place where, you know, you've got someone in the room who's always going, no, that won't work. The whole thing is over before you start it. You gotta keelhaul that person, make them walk the plank immediately, you know. And if it's not a person, if it's just a part of your brain, then again, just gently opening the door and saying, you know, your time will come later, left brain. Thank you, but not now. And
get out of here.
Yeah, exactly, right? And I say to my clients when I'm doing this over a day, I say, the first time it happens, I'm going to invite your left brain gently to leave. The second time, I'll be less patient. By about time number six, I'm going to be yelling at you. You're just going to make me mad, you know, because that left brain is persistent. It really is in coming back and trying to apply itself to whatever you're dreaming up. It's just not the right time.
Yeah, but the problem is I was just doing an impression of my left brain.
Exactly. That's how that left brain sounds, right?
Yeah, pretty much. So I feel like I want to just pull out like phrases out of your book and see what you say about them.
Oh, sure. Now, bear in mind, I will try to remember them all.
That's okay.
Also, I'll tell you this other part of the process before you do, and I'm
sure.
200% open to this. It sounds like fun, but I'll say this as well, which is I wrote the book, and bear in mind that while I've lived in America, I'm living in Sydney right now. And so there are a fair few things that didn't translate. So we actually gave it to an editor out of New York, and she changed, you know, things like I would call the bush, which I'm pretty sure is rude in America. That's just what we call the woods or the forest, you know. So if you give me a phrase, I'm like, I never wrote that. That's just because the editor put it in. But you go ahead.
Oh, that's pretty funny. Okay, so wild dreams.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, for me, this is birthright stuff. You know, if your dreams aren't wild, then they're not really dreams. I think people just get locked into what they think is possible. And that just limits you incredibly. For me, I'm all about wild dreams. I'm always wanting to know what, I mean, that's one thing we do in the talk as well. I just want to know, what are your crazy, wild, outrageous dreams? Don't worry about how to get to them, just what are the dreams? And keeping them in your life is so important.
So actually, what is the wildest dream you have had that you have made happen?
Oh, yeah, my TV show probably was the one. When that happened, I remember exactly, I was, I kind of really like genuine people. So I, at this particular place where I was doing some consulting over the course of a couple of years, doing sort of exec coaching kind of stuff, I used to hang out in the warehouse, right?
Mm-hmm.
At lunchtime, because I like the guys in the warehouse, whatever, that's just me. So I'm in the warehouse, and there's all this kind of shelves and racks and stuff in front of me, and I'm taking this call from Channel 9, which is kind of like NBC.
Okay.
It's kind of the biggest television network in Australia. And there's like three, and that's the big one. And I had pitched them the second season of my kids' TV show, which had already been on cable, but to be on national free-to-air television is kind of night and day, you know. You know, you all of a sudden get to 10 times as many people and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, who am I? Some kid, right, who's put this show together on my own. I'm hosting the show. It's great. It's comedy. It's for children, et cetera. And I just had the dream that I wanted to do it. I didn't really think too hard about whether you could or not, although I got lots of advice saying you couldn't and you needed to be a production company and have millions of dollars and all this crap. I'm like, oh, I don't care. And I remember the day I got the call, and I'm standing in the warehouse, and I was so shocked when the guys said that, okay, we're going to do it, and we're going to send over the paperwork and the contracts. I remember I just fell backwards against the column and just laid out flat on the ground. I was just so absolutely stunned. So that's probably the one dream for me that was so out of possible. You know, that when it happened, I was just knocked down by it. And I think it's almost like since then, all the other things I've wanted to do, you know, for example, even the story of this one book, which has been pretty cool, it's almost like, okay, I understand now that achieving the impossible kind of routinely is something that definitely happens for me. So, but that was a pretty outrageous one that I had happen, you know, in the last couple of years.
Now, I don't know if there's anything that you could, you know, reveal without, you know, outing anybody, but any wild dreams that have come through to you, like from a client or someone, where you've been able to make that happen?
Yeah,
not you've been able, but you've been able to help them.
I've been able to, you know, and I would say I'm kind of a very sweetly invited guest, you know, into the process. So, yeah, I mean, what happens is people come, we do the day, they get absolutely clear, they walk away, you know, with a, you know, somewhat of a map. Sometimes we don't even get past the first step on that day. I mean, that's how involved it gets. And without naming names, because there's absolutely confidentiality, you know, people have great, outrageous dreams. One story I liked was this particular individual was in a spot where they had really serious family issues. In this case, there were some children involved, and they were kind of at, do you know what, does at risk translate? Does that make sense?
Yes, absolutely.
You know, these kids were at risk. There were, you know, drugs and homelessness and so forth and all these sorts of things involved. Also, this person had been in a pretty terrible financial situation for like 20, 30 years. And what we realized as we were mapping out what perfection would look like was that part of it was that she'd been hanging onto some property and trying to kind of maintain the payments. And a lot of people, once they get into property situations, they just, you know, they're kind of locked in and they don't think of what could I do that's different. They just think, how do I make the next payment, right? And so we decided, well, I should say we drew out of this person and then realized that, you know, it might be good to move that and to shift what's happening with her property. And most, when you think of selling property, it takes some time, right?
Sure.
So without saying anything to anyone, she went home. She decided that she was going to do this. She went home. And 24 hours later, she called me up and she said, you wouldn't believe what's happened. I went, oh, yeah, you know, try me, because this happens kind of routinely. I love these stories. They always come back in the next sort of 24, 48 hours from doing this with me, let alone the months after. She said, look, I got into the lift in my apartment building and there was a person moving in, and the person said, hey, you're the person from, you know, whatever the apartment was, 12C. And she went, yeah. She said, and the person said, well, it's you know, I know I don't really know you, but the person above you in 13C, did you know that that person wants to buy your apartment? And she's like, what are you talking about? My apartment is not on sale. I've only thought of that literally in the last 24 hours. And didn't say that to the person next to them. And they said, oh, yeah, it turns out the woman above has been renting her apartment in 13C and is absolutely just really loves that format, just really wants that apartment at that level in the building with, you know, with that layout in that configuration, and she wants to buy your apartment. And from one day to the next, this person went from, you know, financial 30 years of pain to basically making a deal and move, you know, basically selling her apartment, you know, after the escrow and mucking around. It was a month or two, and then she took that. At the same time, her family, out of almost nowhere, the kids just started to show up, call up, and start turning. And that wasn't something you can influence. It just happened, and it happened with not one but all three of the children. Just this clarity. There's something happens. I can't describe you more than to say that it works. And this person's life was turned around. She wound up taking a 12-month holiday in another part of the planet, which I believe she's still there right now.
That is amazing.
It just, these things happen, whether it's relationships, whether it's fertility, whether it's, you know, this stuff really does work in any aspect of your life. And, you know, I'm preaching to the converted here. You know how this stuff works.
I do. And I'm also knowing that people who listen to the show may not necessarily be those people who are converted, and that's where we're converting them.
There you go. Well, the thing for me is about it is it's the results that are addictive. You know, whatever
Absolutely.
It is that's happening, I'm kind of almost, I don't really mind, you know, whether you sort of take the principles of attraction model and that rings true for you, whether you, some clients of mine call it internal attraction, something to do with their subconscious working. I'm like, great, whatever works for you, you know, whatever you want to call it. What is true is, what's been true for me and my clients and the people I've worked with, is it works. It just does. So, you know, that's the addictive bit.
Well, that works for me.
Good.
Exactly.
Yeah, I saw your when I read your profile, it was just like, man, this guy's on the same page.
Well, that's how I felt when I got your book.
Yeah, cool. Well, next time in New York, man, we'll have to catch up and have that breakfast in the diner, I believe, is what I like to do in New York.
Oh, sure. I know all the good diners and some of the bad ones. Not too many bad ones, actually.
Yeah.
And, of course, they're all Greek to me.
I should ask, though, what about you? So, tell me some of your own experiences. I mean, you're working with people. What sort of outrageous stories do you have? I'm totally curious.
Stories from myself, do you mean?
Yeah, from yourself or your clients that you can, you know, talk about without giving away too much.
Well, I have a client who. Here's a great one. I had a client for a good chunk of time, about a year and a half. And one of the things that we created a map, like a not a mind map, really a visual a board.
Okay.
A vision board. Couldn't think of the word. It was a vision board,
mm-hmm,
kind of
mm-hmm.
similar. And one of the things on her board was a picture of a piece of property in Israel. And all of a sudden one day, like, something shifted from this board into her brain, and she wound up moving to Israel. and this is not in her, like, even in her list of things to do when we
right.
first started talking. And the place that she wound up in was, it was like that story in The Secret, you know, the movie?
Right. Yeah, yeah,
the
yeah.
guy who wound up buying the house that was on his board didn't even know it.
Yes.
So it was kind of like that. It's like, that's the view that I have.
Right.
The view that she has is on that picture. Like, she didn't even realize it, but it created this thing in her mind, and then she wound up creating the desire and the plan, and then somewhere along the way, that subconscious thought created exactly what she had on that board.
Absolutely. I find it's interesting you say that as well, this notion that people almost need to forget before these things show up, because what I find is that a lot of work I do with people, if I'm working with people over time, and I don't really do too much of that, but, you know, what I find is it's we need to help them, and you'll relate to this, get out of their own way. People are constantly getting in their own way.
Mm-hmm.
The thing I've noticed that people do is they get extremely attached to one specific way for a result to show up in their life. And when they do, it's like ruling out every other possibility. It's like saying, you know, here is the one way that this can happen that I'm prepared to accept. And the billions and countless other ways that could manifest just kind of get, you know, canceled out. So when you can get people out of their way enough to sort of let this amazing stuff happen, it seems to show up even more strongly than when people kind of try to control it too hard. Have you found that?
Well, sure. And also, there's something interesting of, you know, between how the conscious and unconscious mind works, and where if you're too aware of something, if you're being too conscious about something, you know, if you're doing every step and you notice everything you're doing, you know, like sort of like that, if you know that talk about being consciously incompetent and conscious competence and all that.
Mm.
I'll give you an example. I'm a singer sometimes. I get up and I sing, and I've sung in clubs and with bands, and sometimes I'll just go somewhere and sing. And I will find out that sometimes I've had a moment where I notice what I'm doing. And this may sound really strange, but I notice, like, what I'm doing, and then I can't quite do it because, like,
can't do it.
Who the hell am I? I can't do this. What am I, nuts? And then, like, everybody's looking at me, and I, wait a minute, I have to, what's the words to the song? What the heck am I doing? And it's like that very strange space. And when it's like an unconscious place, what it's like what they call in the zone, where you're not even right. really thinking, you're just doing or being.
Yeah. Yeah.
You're just being.
Yeah.
And that's when I'm like, when I do that and I get off and people go, wow, who are you? That was amazing. Completely different realities.
Yeah, I could just see you do it. I mean, you know, it's the same for everyone, but I can see you with that. You know, the whole thing's happening, and all of a sudden you're like, huh? And then just the perspective shifts, and in that moment, you know, doubt creeps in or whatever, and just everything changes. And the trick is to, I guess, get back into the zone.
Yes.
Always possible when people are chucking stuff, throwing stuff at you.
I hate that, you know, except that sometimes I need tomatoes, but... But here's a great example. I'll give you a great example of like how the brain can really play tricks on you. There was this time when I went skiing for the first time in my life, and I had never been skiing before. I had gone skating many times. I took skating classes, and I was, you know, I'm a bicyclist, so I have really good, you know, strong legs. And so I went with my friend. We're in New Hampshire. We did the bunny slope, you know, the very baby
right,
slope.
Yeah, I know, the very – sure, yeah.
And then, you know, after a couple of times, like, the guy came over to us and said, you know, you guys don't need to be the. You can do whatever you want to do. You're free to go. Have a good day, you know. Oh, cool. So we go around skiing, you know, and then we do a couple of slopes, and then I see this sign that says Black Diamond. I go, oh.
Oh, yeah.
I have guitar strings called Black Diamond. Let's try this one. And my friend goes, like, you know, okay, that sounds good. So we do this Black Diamond thing, you know, and I'm like, you know, Jean-Claude Keeley going down this mountain at, you know, 90 miles an hour, and this is, like, exhilarating. It was amazing. This is so much fun.
Yeah.
Then after that, we ran into our hosts for this weekend, and they said, oh, where you guys been? Oh, we just went down this Black Diamond. Black Diamond? Are you crazy? You could have gotten killed. You know what? And, you know, got all upset about it. And now I have this new thought in my head that's very different from the original thought, which is like, hey, I could do this. And when I did the same hill again, I now have this thought. You know, it's kind of like those cartoons, you know, where the Bugs Bunny or somebody walks over, they're walking over a cliff and they keep walking into space and, wait, you can't do that.
Right.
I can't. Ah! So now every 5 feet I fell. Because I no longer have this thought. It's everything shifted.
Yeah, and the whole thing looks different too, even when you're there, you know. So it's not like before when you're just screaming down, so it's like, yeah, off I go. And now the second time you're looking at it, it's like, wow, this looks steep. This is dangerous. What's going on? Yeah.
Right. Everything changed. Or just from I no longer have the belief and I have a completely different mindset. I could, though, that'd be the old left brain took over the skis.
Yeah. Yeah, and left brain's not so good at skiing, it turns
out. No, terrible skier. not an Olympic champion either.
It's interesting, and what's funny about this as well is that I would love to tell you that I was, I'm like, well, I've learned that once, and having learned it once, I never have that problem again. I'm awesome. In fact, the truth is it just keeps coming up. It's like the more you learn it, the more outrageous your dreams become, and the more kind of when that shift happens. Like I came back from the States, I guess I left New York like 4 days ago, so whatever, that was Friday or something. And came back, met with my family, terrific, so hadn't seen them for a bit. We'd been Skyping every day, but still, you know, just that first hug from your kids, terrific. Get home, we hang out for a weekend. And then on the Monday morning, I'm like, great, I've just learned so much, and I kind of compulsively do the Life Summit process for myself. So I'm, bam, I've got, you know, 20 pages up on the wall. And somehow or other, don't ask me exactly how, somehow I'm like, holy cow. How am I going to do all that? You know, because all of a sudden my ambition has extended by a multiple of five because all these cool things have happened when I'm in the States. And, you know, book sales of 50,000 is no longer enough, you know. and it just somehow it freaked me out. And I just remember sitting on the couch kind of going, you know, just in that total left brain place, how is this going to work? What on earth is going to – oh, my God, I'm going to need so much money just to do the promotional tours. You know, and each one's going to cost 30 grand, and I need to do six in the next year, and that's 200 grand, and I don't have that. You know, all this sort of stuff starts happening, and all I can say is these days, thankfully, it only takes generally a matter of hours, days if I'm being really stupid, to actually kind of go, huh, and just stop, generally sit and meditate, something like that that completely clears my mind and takes me out of that place and into kind of just at least a neutral position. My wife is terrific because she kind of slaps me. She's like, what are you doing? You know how this stuff works. You wrote the damn book, you know. She keeps throwing the book at me now. I don't know if I'd known that if I would have written the book. You know?
I was just thinking that. No, that's so great. You can you can never pretend you don't know now because you wrote the book.
Well, supposedly. Exactly. But you know, you can disconnect from it. And I did, you know, in the last 3 days. What was great is I now know a little bit about how to get out of it. So went into meditation. It's a great meditation I do. Got back to neutral, slept on it, woke up, and just started kind of breaking it down into stuff that felt less impossible and backed it off from what actually was really a 10-year plan, but I was looking at it like it was a, you know, 10-day plan, back it off a little bit, reframe it, kind of get it to where I want, just then released it. And what's great is then, and I've had this experience so many times now, it's just kind of, it's very normal for me, but, you know, within the course of 24 or 48 hours, already things shifted so radically that all these things that I want, I can now see the path to them. But that's the thing that locks a lot of people, it locks me too, is that when you can't see the path, that you tend to get freaked out. And just releasing and going, just because I can't see how, doesn't mean it ain't going to happen, shouldn't, you know, in any way distress me. It's just, I can't see how, I don't know everything. Releasing to that is something that's a little bit tricky, he said. You know, when you can do it, it's a great thing and comes back to the place of, you know, when I'm talking to you now, I'm feeling great about everything. But, you know, 24 hours ago, this is a different interview.
Well, I'm glad it's now then.
I'm kidding. I'm just kidding.
So I have another one I'm going to throw at you.
Oh, yeah.
I have a feeling this one might be from your editor that we'll find out. Okay. Actually, this will definitely stump you the way I'm going to put it. I just want to see how you react to this. There's a paragraph where you prove Bob Dylan wrong.
Oh yeah, I have no idea. That Bob Dylan, I would have definitely written someone else.
Okay.
So, but go ahead, read if you've got the sentence or something.
Yes, you said the answer You said the answer is not Blowing in the Wind.
Oh, yeah, this rings a bell, but I'm sure that was a total replacement sentence. I'm so sorry to disappoint you. I can't remember where that was.
That really just, like, you know, it tripped out, you know, that just, I noticed that one just because, of course, that was a big tune here.
Yeah, absolutely. So I guess, Deb, I have to shout out to Deb in New York. Thanks for putting that one in, Deb. And now
what,
I can't
Deb?
Remember it. Yeah.
So it was, you were talking about... when you were 21, finishing up college, and you had the urge to live your life in a more deliberate, conscious, and intentional manner.
Yeah, now I remember. So what the story around that was this. I guess you could call me a fairly creative person, and I really feel like you could relate to this, because if you're on stage and singing and doing that stuff, that's a really creative process. And, you know, anyone in particular who's, you know, in that artistic, creative, and I think that's part of everybody, but some people really kind of live it. And when I was, you know, a student, that was happening, and I was doing all kinds of comedy stuff, a lot of stand-up, a lot of improv, a lot of stage shows, musicals, a lot of reviews, sketch comedy, all that kind of stuff. And I just kind of, I want to say, living from moment to moment. And I had, you know, big dreams of what I was going to do in my life. I mean, I think I was, you know, a fairly normal 20-year-old. I want all this cool stuff to happen. But I didn't really, you know, none of it happened in a particular hurry. I was kind of working my way slowly through a degree in computer science, as it happens. And on the sort of the computer, the video editing creative sides of computer science, which back then there wasn't much of. And I was just kind of a free spirit, you know, go to the beach. I lived at New South Wales University in Sydney, which is kind of near the water, and, you know, just cruise around the weekends, whatever. So what would happen was, because I was in that kind of very happy-go-lucky place, I was getting very happy-go-lucky response, right? So I wasn't really focused on anything in particular, and I just, you know, I'd want more money or not more money, and one week I've got $10 to pay for food, and the next week I've got $200 to pay for food. And for me at that point, planning, the idea of strategy or planning or the word plan would have definitely been a four-letter word. I don't want a plan. I want a weekend. I want a weekend that goes forever, you know. And the weekends for me are the opposite of planning. It's wake up and what do you feel like doing, you know, and who's around and what's happening and off you go. So for me, planning was incredibly counterintuitive because it was too logical and reasonable. I was in that very creative space, I guess, a lot of young people at university or college, I guess I should say. Are in. And what happened was that my dad, who had already gone through all of that, and he's a terrific guy who's sort of been an executive for a very long time, and he took me along to an Anthony Robbins one-day seminar. Have you ever been to one of those?
I have indeed, absolutely.
Yeah, so I went to whatever the first day thing is. I've never been to anything more than that, but I went to that first day, and I was just, it was like a rock concert, man. It was awesome.
Oh, yeah. Did you walk on fire?
No, I guess that you have to have a couple of days to do that. This
was
just the one-day thing.
Oh, an introduction.
Like the introduction to this stuff. And but I just remember that thing where he claps his hands or something. It's like a big sort of thing, and the whole audience got into it, and it was really cool. To be honest, it was un-Australian. Australians don't get that worked up. It was very kind of American, which was kind of cool, actually. And he was talking all about strategy and planning and sort of getting clear on what you want and all that kind of stuff in his own way, and which doesn't sort of come from a metaphysical context, or at least it didn't at that time. In fact, it had nothing to do with spirituality or religion or anything like that. It was very kind of left brain, really. And I kind of somehow or other something clicked. And a friend of mine in the States at the time, he kind of somehow from some other angle had decided to get into it too. And all of a sudden, the two of us who were buddies were like, you know, we're going to do this. Let's try this. And what was amazing was, again, as I was talking before, what I got addicted to was the results.
Mm-hmm.
All of a sudden, stuff that had seemed really annoying to me before, like planning, you what? You want to tell me what to do hour by hour? That's appalling. I don't want that. All of a sudden, I just became addicted to the traction. All of a sudden, I was doing the work I needed to do for university in like a fraction of the time, and I was leaving all this great time for free time to have that long day at the beach, you know, and I got really clear about what I wanted work-wise, and stuff started to show up. It was very interesting because I knew nothing about the principles of attraction at the time, but just the process of consistent focus. And I was very unambiguous about it because, you know, I was a kid. I didn't have doubt and fear just yet, really. And it started to work. So that's what that was about. That's what that quote was about, was going from that very organic place, which I thought was the best place in the world, to the better place, which is having these really conscious and consistent focus on desire and having that show up, which I found, frankly, in the end, far more exciting and desirable and fulfilling than just kind of floating about like a student.
Mm. You know, by the way, if you ever have a chance to go to the Anthony Robbins all weekend thing, plenty of right brain stuff in there. Let me tell you, the experience of the firewalk alone was a tremendously incredible. I mean, I can't even begin to describe this moment of walking on fire. I don't know if you ever got into a firewalk.
I'm keen to get out to Fiji. That sounds pretty cool.
Yeah.
And, you know, spend the week. I've been told some amazing things about that. So, you know, one day, here's my thing. One day Anthony's be like, Tim, I've seen your work and I'd like you to be my guest. Yeah.
you never know. He might be looking for you.
Strange things.
I'll speak to him. I'll tell him he needs to give you a call.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. Hey. This is what's been so weird about this this last trip in the States is this is what's exactly started to happen. Instead of like, let's see if we can book events, the next trip I'm doing, I think, is almost exclusively people who've come and seen what I've been doing and said, all right, come speak to our company, come speak to our group. So I think we're almost exclusively invitation only this next trip I'm doing. Which really is an amazing turnaround. And we're getting close to people like Tony Robbins as well, not Tony in particular, but, you know, getting one step away from that. So it's been a very inspiring experience that way.
No, that's awesome.
So
let's see, what's next for you, Tim Levy?
Well, that's an interesting question. I happen to have it up on the wall. let me see. Firstly, what is clear to me is that this book, which, you know, in many ways I wrote out as a favor to friends, and I really did it. I decided to take a year off between season 2 and season 3 of the TV show and take some time and be among my family a bit more because I'd missed some stuff the year before with, you know, you can imagine traveling for all the episodes and everything's in a different city and so forth. So I thought I'd take a year out. What I found is that in working with people as this book's come about and I've been working with people more, doing the process with them and so forth, I really like it. I'm addicted to the results of I guess what I call magnitude change. And again, I read your page and it's like I'm reading my own profile in a way. I love it. It's so satisfying when you take a person from wherever they are to so much closer to where they want to be, even just the clarity, let alone working with them longer term. So I'm really keen to sort of build that into something. People have basically found me and approached me to become partners in different capacities. So there's going to be like 8 parts to this business now. We're going to have half of it out of Sydney and half of it most likely out of Austin. And in fact, I'm back there in a month with my wife just to show her the town with the intention that we might, you know, spend more of our time over there. So what's next is possible to move back to the States with the family and really build this thing and really grow this thing in response to what people have been asking. I would be shocked if there wasn't more television in my future. already we've had some great thoughts there and some interest there. I had this notion, and it was while I was in the States this last time, where there are a lot of parts of the States that have been quite deeply affected by recession. I guess New York is not one of them, but if you've spent any time, I guess there's parts of Carolina and Detroit and Memphis and so on that have really been rocked. And I guess the way it's been pitched to me is that they have absolutely lost connection with hope. They're in a place of despair and just total fog. It's just like, you know, just disaster zone stuff. And I've been invited to a couple of those places to speak and also to see if I can come run the process with some educators, some politicians and so forth. So I love the idea of doing maybe a sort of a documentary series where we go run the Life Summit process with people who most need it, you know, and see what we can't do to encourage, you know, that movement from despair to hope, from fog to clarity. And see if we can bring a little bit of that magic where it's really most needed. I mean, I work with clients who can afford thousands of dollars a day, but what about people who can't? So I'm really interested in doing that. We're looking into that now. We're sort of looking into the funding. So if you know anyone who knows anyone who would like to be a secret benefactor, well, you know, I'm in the market for that right now, so please let them know.
Yeah, I'm involved with various people who are the types of people who support those kinds of things. So that's possible.
Really?
Sure.
You know, I really would love that. I would just genuinely love an opportunity to go do that. And whereas in my past TV stuff, you know, it's a process of several years as you go pitch in the big markets and get the networks on board, and the whole thing takes a long time, I just want to get in there. I mean, the time for action on this is now. The people that I'm talking to are in need right now. And I love the idea I could just go do that. For me, all the issues around crew and TV and all that stuff are incredibly easy and solvable. It's just finding, a patron, a mystery patron, to come on board and say, that just sounds worthwhile, go do it. And I'm looking for that, right? So that's in the immediate future as well, I hope.
By the way, is the TV show that you do something that could be watched over here?
It never broadcast in the States, so it was only on cable in Australia and Channel 9, all the episodes. What I did do is I put a little promo, like a two-minute piece on the site. So if you go, I'm just having a look now, actually, but if you go to thelifesummit.com, let me see, can you do that right now at the same time?
Here we go, technology.
thelifesummit.com, and I think I put it in my bio, a link to the... Oh, in fact, you can just go straight to the YouTube channel. So right up the top on the right of the very front page, it just says YouTube, and that's sort of the channel where we've got half a dozen little bits of video from my past. And, in fact, I think the one that turns up straight away is the Groove Delicious MIPCOM promo, and that was for season 3 of Groove Delicious The Life Unlimited, which is where we basically took this technology we're talking about and applied it in real time to children. So we made kids into rock stars and pirates and spaceship captains, but we did it for real. So we actually, you know, took a 9-year-old kid and got her her single recorded in 3 hours. We got her on the radio, on the air on Sydney's top network for that, you know, within the course of 10 hours. So we would do real-time life dreams.
Wow.
Which was really cool fun. So the only issue was that the third season was getting too big because the 26 cities were no longer going to be in Australia. They were going to be all over the world. I'm like, I need a break. But the intention is to get back to that possibly in the coming years. But I'm just having too much fun doing the Life Summit right now, so I'll get back to it at the right time. But can you see the clip there? Has it come up in front of you okay?
Oh, yes. I turned my sound off because I'm on the radio.
There you go. So you can see me goofing around with large numbers of children. With my improv and comedy background, I love doing live stuff with large groups of kids, except when they come after me with foam axes, which, as I'm looking at the first frame of that, was shot at the Cub Scout, big Cub Scout day, where there were like 8,000 Cub Scouts at the Sydney Olympic Park. And they were doing this thing where they were impersonating Vikings, and I got absolutely gutted by these kids with their foam axes that day.
Well, Tim, guess what? We have 1 minute left in our show, and I would like to thank you so very much. I wish we had more time. And you can learn more about Tim Levy at www.thelifesummit.com. And I know you said you have a Facebook fan page.
Absolutely.
So let's we can find you there.
It's all through the site, just thelifesummit.com.
The
everything's connected to the front page of the site. Yeah, please, absolutely.
Awesome. So thanks so much, and thanks, everyone, for listening. We'll be back next week with my guest, Francine Silverman, and have an outstanding next 7 days. Good night, everyone.